You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
The famous Dunedin Multidisciplinary Health and Development Study has hit a new milestone, its 52 years of age data assessment. The study, which has followed the lives of 1,037 babies born between 1972 and 1973 in Ōtepoti, is now in its sixth decade, and has produced over 1,000 publications and reports, a great deal of which have influenced and shaped policy in Aotearoa and abroad. As the Dunedin study subjects get reassessed in middle age, we're checking in with study director Professor Moana Theodore to understand the significance of this new chapter of the study. Good morning to you, Moana. How are we?
Kia ora. Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. The initial study looked at 1,000 singleton babies and 12 sets of twins. This is just a very, very curious question of mine. But is there any like sub-analysis within your work comparing how the lives of twins are?
It's an interesting question because early on, the study was set up originally to sort of follow babies, and particularly those that had been born small, because at the time, back in the 1970s, doctors were saving babies earlier. So it did at the very beginning look at sort of whether or not there were any, in terms of growth and development. And what we know now from the literature is generally most babies do okay in terms of their health and development as they get older, including those that are saved early. There are a few complications. So that's we tend to, because there's only 24, you mentioned the twins, because that's such a small number, we're not able to do too much analysis for any statistics students that are listening in today. But certainly that idea of, what happens at the beginning of life and how it impacts in later life has been a key research question over time at this study in many ways.
The study is a longitudinal study, so it examines and re-examines subjects over time. A classic issue with these studies run into is retention drop-offs, especially now that we're in a post-COVID era where fewer people are participating in scientific studies, but you still have a 92% retention rate. Why is it so high?
Yeah, that's probably our key point of difference with every other study of its kind in the world. So we're not the largest study anymore. We are the longest running study in New Zealand, a birth cohort study. The participation rate is unmatched. 92%, more than 92% after 50 years. And that is, I think there's a few reasons why we have such an incredible participation rate. The goodwill of the study members and their families, and also that it was started as a community study. It was founded by Dr. Phil Silver, but it had many volunteers. So the community have been a key part of the study for a long period of time. We've got long-term staff as well, so that's really important in terms of relationships, especially for people to be able to come in and see us and not feel judged, because we ask them so many questions about their lives. And that's really important. And why the participation rate is so important is because, as you were sort of saying, we get a number, most studies see about 50, 60, 70% of their study members over time. Those are usually the ones that also participate in other societal institutions, so they're more likely to be educated or employed, but we see everyone, and that gives us a full picture of human experiences and human life.
It's really impressive. The study members have been they've been assessed 14 times now, I believe. That was my count. With the last assessment being when they were age 45. Now they've mostly turned 52. Yeah. Why is this an important age worth assessing?
Yeah, it's actually an understudied age. So a lot of studies look at, importantly, they look at the first few years of life or children or adolescents. That's really important because what happens to us when we're young does impact us throughout our lives. And now, but for our study, it's becoming a study of aging, which, and they're only 52, but most studies of aging have looked at people that are sort of older than 65, 70, 80. And what happens there is you get something called a healthy survivor bias, where people that have had healthier lives live longer. But what happens to us in terms of our health in later life or aging, actually we can see, we can look to midlife, so, you know, 38, 45, 52, for some of those to look at how diseases may develop over time. And we take a life course approach to aging. So, and our research to date has shown that we're able to identify already people that are aging faster or people that are aging slower. The importance of that is it means that, you know, clinicians, policymakers can look to intervene early to support people to live longer and live healthier.
You mentioned on Morning Report that at this point you are kind of looking for biomarkers for certain age-related diseases like dementia. Are there any other big age-related diseases you're looking for?
Yeah, I mean, we look at across, so it's interesting that the field of aging, in terms of biological aging, there's a few thoughts around it, but our study has been able to look at, you know, what happens to the overall body. So how different multiple organ systems, multiple body systems change over time. Our study members come in for a day and a half. So that's the other thing that makes it unique, just how much information we collect at the study. So we're able to not just ask them questions about how they feel or how they feel about their aging. We actually do gold standard clinical measures. So MRIs, brain scans, lung function, dental. So it gives us a picture of the overall body, and then we're able to track how it changes over time.
Do you look at diet as well?
We have done a little bit on diet, but certainly cardiovascular measures. So things like, we take quite a lot of blood. our study members are so generous. So we look at those cardiovascular measures. We do blood pressure. We've done that since they were, I want to say 7. So, you know, we're able to look at this change over time, which is, you know, which is the heart of longitudinal research.
And it's fascinating, I think, on Morning Report, you also mentioned how childhood environment and upbringing affects the adult. Obviously, since the 70s, there's been a huge reckoning in New Zealand with how children are raised. Do you think there are going to be any big revelations beyond the fact that, you know, poverty and maltreatment as a child can ruin people in the long run?
Yeah, well, it definitely has an impact. And I guess I mentioned policymakers earlier. You know, we know that if you can intervene as early as possible with a baby or tamariki or the whānau, if you can look to support very early on, then that's really, it's almost like that's where you would look to invest. That's where you get the most out of your investment.
Yeah.
But that, it's not deterministic, you know. Any study that ours is about probability, you know, and there are remarkable stories of resilience as well in terms of, you know, people that have had hard lives. Even our study members that come in who have had hard lives and say, you know, I'm giving this information because I don't want other people to go through necessarily what I've gone through. So yes, intervening early, prevention is really important, but you can look across different points in the life course as well, you know, when people are young people or as they get older, to see at other points where you can also try to help, you know, help improve people's lives. So we definitely take that approach, but what happens in early life is really important, and that first 2,000 days.
You began work on this study initially in 1998 when you were checking in on participants when they turned 26. Now they're basically double that age. As you've sort of aged with the study, how has it made you reflect on your health?
Yeah, you've done your research. I certainly did. Yeah, and I'm Generation X as well, so proudly. So, yeah, it does. I sometimes feel like, you know, we're very fortunate, you know, working at a university or studying at a university, you know, we get to learn about all this amazing, you know, this amazing science, or, you know, depending on what the students are listening, you know, look at. So we sometimes can take for granted that we learn these these facts about life and human behavior and things like that. So I sometimes can't tell whether, you know, something I'm thinking or the way that I'm behaving is to do with that or you know, other things. I think it certainly has impacted me. It's impacted me as a mum, I think, more in the way that I've raised my children. So, and shout out to University of Otago. My daughter graduated last Saturday. I've got a son now that's first year, Tarangi Hiro. And it certainly, I think, had an impact on their understanding of their early life, as well as having compassion around, you know, what happens to people as their youth and you know, some of the trials and tribulations of being a young person in today's society, the importance of mental well-being. I may not get a chance to talk about it this time around. I can come back on, but, you know, mental health, it's such an important area, mental well-being for all of us. And that has certainly been findings from the study that we could all, you know, we can all be supported in terms of our mental well-being as well.
Totally. You're going to be poring over the analysis, the data from this new assessment for a while yet, I can imagine. But can you say when the next assessment will be?
Yes. Well, it's always dependent on a few factors, including funding, and we got amazing funding, especially from New Zealand funders, Health Research Council, shout out to MB. We're hoping 58-59, but ideally as our as the cohort ages, as our study members age, we would want to see them at shorter intervals because so much happens as we age. It's very similar to when the study started. We would see them every 2 years because so much happens in their early life.
Yeah.
So ideally that would be the case, but we just always have to see how we go with the logistics as well.
Well, let's hear it for another 100 years of the Dunedin study. Thank you so much for coming on the program, Moana. Do you have any final words or thoughts for our listeners?
No, just a huge thanks to the University of Otago. It's been obviously based here since the start. We get incredible support from the university and from our colleagues throughout the university who have supported this phase. And it's a collective success around age 52 assessments. And we're really excited now to be working on the data and putting out findings that will hopefully help to improve not just that generation, 50-year-olds, but also generations to come as well.
Well, I hope to have a chat with you 7 years down the line when you get into your next assessment phase.
Sounds good.
Take care, mate. Bye.
Kia ora.
That was the director of the Dunedin Study, Professor Moana Theodore. We just had a chat with her about the Dunedin Study entering its new phase, doing data collection on its participants as they have hit age 52.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.